Hi, friend. Thanks so much for downloading this broadcast, and it is my most sincere hope that you'll hear something that will change you forever, edify, equip, enlighten, encourage, and then get you out there into the marketplace of ideas. That's what this program is designed to do. By the way, not my idea. That's where Jesus told us to go and tell. And sometimes when you get out there, it's kind of rough. So I'm going to take a moment to tell you about this month's Truth Tool because it understands it can be rough out there. Ray Comfort is a bold evangelist for the cause of the cross, and I so appreciate every time I get to talk to him. He's written a book called So Many Lions, So Few Daniels, how true that is. And he wants us to discover how to live fearlessly for Christ. And he notes that like Daniel in Babylon, Christians today are exiles in a hostile culture. And every day we face the lions, the easier role of moral compromise, the lure of earthly wealth and influence, the temptation to give in to our fears or our apathy. And yet we're called to obey God rather than humankind, and we need encouragement to do it. That's what this book is all about, and it's why I've chosen So Many Lions, So Few Daniels as this month's Truth Tool. We're a listener-supported radio, and it's a very tangible way not only for me to help you grow up in Him, but to say thank you for your financial support for In the Market with Janet Parshall. Here's how you do it. Just call 877-JANET-58. That's 877-JANET-58. Ask for your copy of So Many Lions, So Few Daniels, or do it online, inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Scroll to the bottom of the page. There's the cover of the book. Click it on. Make your donation right through the website, and we'll send you a copy of So Many Lions, So Few Daniels. And in this book, my fervent prayer is that you will learn how to live without compromise in a world so desperately needing the truth. While you're on the website, by the way, discover what it means to be a partial partner. Those are people who give every single month at a level of their own choosing. I have lots of ways of saying thank you to my partial partners. You'll always get the Truth Tool, but in addition to that, there's a weekly newsletter that includes an audio portion that only my partial partners hear. So again, 877-JANET-58 or online at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org and ask for your copy of So Many Lions, So Few Daniels, or become a partial partner. And now, please, enjoy the broadcast.
Here are some of the news headlines we're watching.
By the time the conference was over, the president won a pledge.
So Americans worshiping government over God.
An extremely rare safety move by a nation.
17 years the Palestinians and Israelis negotiated.
This idea of checks is not
friends, welcome to In the Market with Janet Parshall. A very happy Monday to you. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. And thanks so much for joining us this hour. We are all news, but I want to start out with some good news. If you go to my Facebook page, which is, and here's the address, it's the name of the program, In the Market with Janet Parshall, just the name of the program, you'll get to my Facebook page. I love to put Bible verses of encouragement up on a regular basis. And I was thinking Mondays, not a lot of people stand up and shout, yay, it's Monday. But I was thinking that as believers, every day we should have that joy, 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 joy down in our heart. Because if this Monday was the last day you were ever going to be alive on planet Earth, and you know Christ is your personal Savior, well, then real life begins. You will be instantaneously absent from the body and present with the Lord. And I don't know about you, but that's a magnificent coming, and I can't wait for it. And I hope you're feeling exactly the same way. But here's the verse that I put on my Facebook page. It's from Psalm 5:11. But let all who take refuge in you, O God, be glad. Let them ever sing for joy. Spread your protection over them, that those who love your name may rejoice in you. I hope that you are having that feeling of rejoicing today, because sometimes, well, when you take a look at the culture around us and you think, oh, it's awful. Good is called evil. Evil is called good. And there's no doubt whatsoever that man is doing what is right in his own eyes. And that's not working out real well for us, in case you hadn't noticed. We are also, by the way, Daniels in Babylon. We are Christians today that are being held as exiles in a hostile culture, but we've been here before. We followers of Christ. We God-fearers, as the scripture calls us. And so when we look at what happened, for example, for those Jews who were taken away to Babylon, Jeremiah comes and he delivers a letter and he tells them how to live while they're held in captivity. And you know what's interesting? You listen to the bullet points that he gives them. And if you go back and read that passage in Jeremiah, they're all applicable today, which is magnificent. But, you know, out of that Babylonian captivity period came a young man, a 15-year-old, a teenager, who would, before his life was over, serve not one, not two, but three kings. Tells you a little bit something about his character, does it not? Because you don't keep people you don't trust around kings very long. But he was there. But what he did was this. He understood he was in a hostile culture. It was a pagan culture. There were pagan idols that had brought into the temple, and far too many of the people who loved God and feared God practice what we're seeing today, which is a kind of syncretism, a little bit of the world and a little bit of the word. You put them together and you have a hot spiritual mess. And we're doing that today in some churches where we're waffling between two opinions, where the Bible says absolutely not, and we say, oh, but we love people, so absolutely yes. And in so doing, we've turned our back on what the Lord has put down. Thus saith the Lord. Now, there's a way to love people without condescending. There's a way to love people without acquiescing. There's a love people without way to love people without turning a blind eye and a deaf ear when they have turned their back on God. Don't love somebody to death, whatever you do. But if you decide that you're going to speak the truth in love, that directive we get in Ephesians, well, you're going to get some roars and you're going to get some pushback. And so that's why I want to remind you that while this is the first Monday in October for us to bring this broadcast to you, it's also the brand new day for a brand new truth tool. And I was thinking a lot about lions. So I went to Ray Comfort's book, So Many Lions, So Few Daniels. He understands where we are today. And every day we face the lions, the easier road of moral compromise, the lure of earthly wealth and influence, the temptation to give in to our fears or our apathy. And yet we have been called to obey God rather than humankind. Quite frankly, we just need the courage to be able to do it. So that's why I chose this book. I thought you could use some encouragement, and I thought you could use some courage, because we've defeated the greatest foe there is, and that's death. Death has been conquered, right? No declared victory anymore at a graveside. For those of us who know Christ Jesus, we will instantaneously, as I said a moment ago, be absent from the body and present with the Lord. It is finished, he declared from the cross. So we can be confident, we can be brave, and we can be courageous. And sometimes you need a real good teacher to just remind you that. And boy, if that isn't Ray Comfort, I don't know who he is. He is absolutely, quintessentially a lion. If you've heard my conversations with Ray over the year, he reminds us how to be unashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're listener-supported radio, so that's what these truth tools are all about. They're a very pragmatic and practical way of my putting my arms around your neck and giving you a hug. Can't quite do that through this microphone, but I can do it in a way that says, hey, I'm thinking about you. This book impacted me. I hope it'll help you grow up in him as well. This book really taught me some things about who I am, far more importantly, who God is and who I can be in and through him. And I thought maybe you could use that same encouragement as well, particularly when we're seeing this, well, this Babylonian existence that we're living right now, where we are being intimidated into acquiescence. And it's going to be a winnowing, I believe, between the wheat and the chaff, the sheep and the goats. And I don't know about you, I don't want to just sing about being found faithful. I want to be found faithful, and I want to be courageous. So Many Lions, So Few Daniels is yours for a gift of any amount. All you have to do is call 877-JANET-58, 877-JANET-58. Say, I want So Many Lions, So Few Daniels, and we'll send one right off to you for a gift of any amount that helps support the ongoing ministry of In the Market with Janet Parshall. You can do it online as well at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org, the name of the program, inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. You will have to scroll to the bottom of the page. There's the cover of the book. And when you get there, all you have to do is click on through, make your donation, and we'll send you a copy of So Many Lions, So Few Daniels. I should point out also that on that same website, just below the Truth Tool, is an invitation to become a partial partner. Partial partners are people who support this program on an ongoing basis, every month, to be exact. I don't set the level, they do. And of the many things you're going to get, number one, you're offered the Truth Tool every month. So you don't have to be both a partial partner and a one-time giver. You can be a partial partner, and we'll offer you that Truth Tool every single month. All you have to say is, yes, I want it. And we'll send you an email to remind you of that. But you'll also get a newsletter that comes out every Thursday. And as part of that newsletter, there's a little audio piece from me that only my partial partners hear. So just a quick review, because this is our first Monday with a brand new Truth Tool. So Many Lions, So Few Daniels. This month's Truth Tool, yours for a gift of any amount. You can call 877-JANET-58. That's 877-JANET-58. Or you can give online at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. That's inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. And if you want to, when you're there, again, scroll down just below the book on the website, and there's the invitation to become a partial partner. And again, it'll explain to you how I say thank you. So Many Lions, So Few Daniels. I believe you and I can be a lion. And we can be obedient, courageous, and just like Daniel, not bend our knee, so we can face the roaring lions of the culture, because we have the Lion of Judah protecting us. We're going to take a break and come right back. Get out that prayer list, will you? Because we've got a lot of things for you to think about. and to start praying about, because after all, you have been called for such a time as this. Back after this. Like Daniel in Babylon, Christians today are exiles in a hostile culture. And even though the lions are roaring, we can't be silent. That's why I've chosen So Many Lions, So Few Daniels by Ray Comfort as this month's truth tool. Even with an uncertain future, we must live fearlessly for Christ, regardless of the cost. Ask for your copy of So Many Lions, So Few Daniels when you call 877-JANET-58. That's 877-JANET-58, or go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Now, just last week, Craig and I were talking about Disney green lighting this program, and I'm not going to name the streaming service because I don't want to draw you there, and I'm not even going to say the name of the program. Suffice it to say, it came out of the UK, and it's sort of a redo of The Dating Game. If you know what that is, you're as old as I am. Only the difference this time is every one of the contestants is naked. And we, Craig and I, walked through Genesis 2 and 3 to talk about how significant that is and what a picture it is for being in perfection before the fall of man. And after sin came into the world, the first thing they did was realize they were naked and ashamed. So it says something about our spiritual state. So in what I refer to, and I think you get the word picture on this, a Nimrod-esque moment, remember? He was in total rebellion against God. He was going to build a tower that was going to go all the way up to heaven, shoot his arrow, boom, and he was taking on God, a kind of second rebellion after Satan takes a third of the angels. Well, suffice it to say, in case you hadn't figured it out how this ends, Nimrod loses and people are scattered and nations are built. So that'll tell you something about the whole philosophy of hegemony, but that's a conversation for another day. The point is, when you hear about the green lighting of these kinds of projects, you have one of two responses. And this is why I love talking to Karen Cavell. You can get mad, you can pick up a stone and you can throw it, or you can build a wall. And I would rather subscribe to the second option, because you understand, and this is what Karen has taught me, credit where credit is due. It's so easy for us to look at Hollywood, and I will grant you, especially the stuff that we talk about here, that it is Sodom and Gomorrah. But if you flip your perspective and you look at it instead as Nineveh, where even though Jonah hated the Ninevites for what they were doing to his people, he, in obedience, while he was a peevish prophet, he went nonetheless, and revival broke out. From the king to the cattle, revival breaks out throughout the land. So you and I can pray to that end, because I got to tell you, their worldview doesn't change until their vision change, and their vision doesn't change until their heart changes, and their heart doesn't change until they have an encounter with Jesus Christ. So on that note, if you don't know who Karen is, let me introduce her to you, and maybe it'll encourage you to become a part of the Hollywood Prayer Network. She's the founding director of said organization. She speaks and teaches all across the country and teaches us how to pray for people who are in the entertainment industry, because contrary to presumption, the most important influencers are not the people in my town of Washington, D.C., but they are in Karen's town. And how do I know that? Because life more and more is imitating art rather than the other way around, where art just picked up and restated what they saw in life. It's the other way around. And so if you're going to change that perspective, you need to be praying for people, people who don't yet know the Lord, and those whom God has called into, yes, this mission field. Karen, I am thrilled that you're with us, because so much has happened in just the last few days. It's almost overwhelming. I have to start, before you tell my friends the outcome, just talk to me about what it's like for you to bring several volunteers from the Hollywood Prayer Network and to literally march along the picket line, handing out bottles of water and praying for and with your fellow picketers. Now, that's not a story that's going to show up in Variety, and I doubt it's going to be in the LA Times or the Chicago Tribune. I want to hear from you. What happened when you were doing that?
Well, it was amazing, because over 40 of us showed up. We had even a Jewish leader in town. We had Christian leaders from different organizations. We had pastors. We had Christian professionals. And we just showed up to love people. It was a hot day. What we did was we bought water bottles and took the labels off and put on Hollywood Prayer Network labels that said, how can we pray for you, with our QR code? And we passed them out to everybody, and we prayed with people. In fact, we found one of the strike captains who kind of organizes the strike line at that studio was a Christian. So we started praying, two of us started praying for him. And then we looked up, and there were three more people that just heard us praying and came over while we were praying for him and joined the group. And we were singing, and it was so joyful. We didn't get any pushback. We just got lovely people thanking us for the water, thanking us for coming. It was pretty miraculous.
When they looked and they saw the Hollywood Prayer Network name on that bottle, I bet some of them did a double take. Was that an open door for people to ask about the Hollywood Prayer Network?
It sure was. And some people were like, oh, what is this for? We go, we just want you to know we love you and we're praying for you. Other people said, for anything? You'll pray for anything? I said to the lady, sure. What do you want me to pray for? Well, I need work. And I said, well, that's why we're here. So, yes, I'll pray for you. It was very fun. And then one another strike captain, who I don't know whether he was a Christian or not, he said, you know, those water bottles are really heavy. If you want to just put some in my cooler here, do that. And he was at the gate with the official registration table and had a cooler of water bottles with ice. So we just packed his cooler with our water bottles, and he just thought that was a great idea. So
Oh my. It
was really fun.
Oh, how wonderful. What an open door for the gospel, and what a wonderful way to introduce people to the Hollywood Prayer Network. So that takes us to where we are on the writer's strike right now. Give us an update, if you would, Karen.
We're holding our breath. So the agreement was made with the WGA. They're just going to vote, and they are actually sitting down. The AMPTP executives are sitting down with SAG today. And we are waiting with bated breath to see if everything's going to move forward. We could possibly be done with both strikes this week, and I'm very prayerful about that.
Yeah, so let me linger here, because the last time we talked, they were 180 degrees apart. There were all kinds of issues there, health insurance and royalties and usage of AI. I noticed just today that Tom Hanks is suing now because an AI-generated image of himself was used, I think, in a plan to advance dental care or something. And therein lies the example of why there's been so much conversation about this, which is you're trading off of my industry. You learn this in high school class. It's one of the five kinds of speeches you give. What's the personal endorsement speech, right? You bring that brand to the other brand and you help sell your brand. That's the way it works. So Tom Hanks's brand is being used to sell something that he wasn't contracted to sell. So with those kinds of very important 21st century issues that they've never had to argue and debate about before, if they're close, do you think that means they've reached at least? I mean, it's like us sort of trying to work on the budget here in Washington. We pass what are called continuing resolutions, where we keep the government going, and we just keep passing those until we finally get together. Do you think that they have bridged the gap enough where there could be closure on this?
Well, I do think it's bridged enough. It's not where they want to be, but they have to get working. And it's the first time that the AMPTP has really been willing to talk since they started striking on July 14th. So they've been awful. And finally, they're sitting down. And since WGA is satisfied, they want SAG to be satisfied. So I'm hopeful.
Good. What a wonderful news report. Thank you for that, Karen. So glad I have more time with you. Karen Cavell is the founding director of the Hollywood Prayer Network. I have a link on my website. You can join people literally around the globe who are praying for the entertainment industry. Back after this. It is our distinct privilege on a regular basis to visit with Karen Cavell, who's the founding director of the Hollywood Prayer Network. And what she does so beautifully is she exemplifies loving people and letting them see Jesus in your life, particularly in the cutthroat business of entertainment. And it is indeed cutthroat. So through the Hollywood Prayer Network, what Karen does every month is she sends out something called a call sheet. In the business, the call sheet is the people who have to show up on set that day because your scene's going to be filmed. So you're called on the set because they're going to make sure that you do what you need to do. Well, I love her flipping that around and making it a call sheet for the church. We need to show up on set and be praying for these people. And I'm going to give a classic example why. And I love it when Karen puts names in specifically, because I know these people know their names have been cited. Everybody follows themselves in that business, believe me. And so when someone has a yay God story, or there's been someone who's turned to Christ for their faith, those are the sorts of stories that we want to know about. Pray for their discipleship, they're maturing in the Lord, or someone who might be struggling and doesn't yet know the Lord. So let me give you an example. I was thrilled that you put Julie Chen Moonves into this, because this is a very interesting story. Talk about what has happened in her life. And what happened, she married to the former CEO of CBS, Les Moonves, And this was a man, by the way, who very much liked the program Touched by an Angel, but yet didn't know Jesus Christ. So what happened to Julie?
Well, it's pretty amazing. Julie was pretty much thrown off of the talk in 2018 when her husband was accused of sexual misconduct. She was supporting him. It was a tough experience for her. And she, I don't know whether it's in the meantime or at that point, she has really turned to Jesus. And she has decided that he's her anchor, not her job, not her husband, not her fame, not her success. And she is coming out and talking about where she is with her faith and how it actually got her through the tumultuous years that she walked through. So we are praising God for that, because her husband, Les Moonves, was also known as a incredibly anti-Christian leader mm-hmm. of CBS television. Mm-hmm. And he, when Touched by an Angel was the hugest hit on television under his reign, he kept calling it a fluke and saying, people really don't want this. This is just a fluke. He would never acknowledge that it was actually meeting the spiritual desires of the audience. And so it's been a battle between the both of them in the entertainment industry. And now she is just boldly saying that Jesus is who she's following. So it's very exciting.
Well, and isn't it amazing? You know, I always think, what's the perspective of the booking producer, right? So they decide to get her on in the biz. So it makes perfect sense they would reach out to her. But she has an audio memoir called But First, God. And so she's been on shows like Good Morning America. And she is, you know, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. She's unashamed to talk about her relationship with Jesus Christ. So her platform now is being used to tell people about the shallowness that she thought filled the hole in her heart versus what she really knows now about having a sense of significance because of her relationship with Christ. But you point out we need to be praying for Les still. Talk to me about that.
Well, yes, because, you know, I know quite a few people where one of the spouses is following the Lord and the other one is not interested. I don't know where he is now. Honestly, it would be a miracle if he acknowledges that he has or will turn to Jesus. So we need to pray for him, pray for her strength, her wisdom with their relationship, her not wanting to have to step back in her faith, but be bold. And when you have a spouse walking with you, it's a lot easier. And so we want to see him acknowledge the Lord, and we want to see her be strengthened. She is a role model now, and every time one more celebrity claims their commitment to Jesus, it gives other people more confidence to do it themselves.
Yes.
So she is not only being bold in her own life, but she is helping so many other, I call them closet Christians in the industry, who aren't sure it's okay to say anything. And when they see somebody like Julie doing that boldly, other people will take bigger risks themselves. And so it's like the Madeleine L'Engle saying that one person can throw a pebble in the water and the ripples go out forever.
Wow. What a reason to be praying. And again, specifically on that prayer list, that Julie's husband, Les, would come to faith in Christ as well. You included what I thought was a fascinating piece in this month's call sheet. I don't know. It's to me, it's a fascinating study in either anthropology or social science. But I do not know why the horror film genre remains to this day the number one most popular genre for films. I don't like to be scared. I don't like to have my heart stop for 2 seconds, right? So that's not my thing. And by the way, I just remember my mama, whatsoever things are good, pure, lovely, of good report, think on these things. And that stuff just doesn't fall in that category. So you ask us to pray specifically for the people in the horror genre. Talk to me about that.
Oh, I know it's radical, Janet, but I have to say this. There are certain genres of films that niche markets that people just absolutely are passionate about. The horror films, martial arts films, actually Christian faith-based films, different genres that there's an audience. They don't care how cheap it is, how bad it is. They will show up at every single one. And the horror genre is the best one that allows you to talk directly in someone's face about good and evil. It allows you to talk about Jesus, to talk about spiritual things, to talk about miracles, to talk about evil and how horrible it is in a low-budget genre where you've got an audience that's going to come and listen to anything you tell them. So Christians should be in that. Christians should be taking advantage of a platform where the movies don't have to be expensive, where the people are going to come regardless, and where they can preach the gospel without hesitating. It's a radical thought.
It is, but then when you think about it, the gospel's radical. Not only that, but you think about ultimately, this is about good versus evil. When a Christian gets involved, they remind us that good triumphs over evil. So I think that's an important lesson. I hardly scratched the surface. You need to sign up and get the call sheet through the Hollywood Prayer Network. I've made it easy. There's a link on my website. Check it out. Blessings to you, friend. Thank you. We'll be back after this. Christians are called to go into the marketplace of ideas. Throughout history, men and women of God have been thought leaders, innovators, and forces for good. We want this program to continue in that bold tradition. Join me by becoming a partial partner. Your monthly gift will make a difference as we help Christians take a bold stand in the marketplace of ideas. Call today, 877-JANET-58, or go online to inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org. We are likewise blessed to have regular visits with Wesley Smith. He is a kind of John the Baptist. I've thought that for years, by the way. With a strong, clear, unwavering voice, he takes a stand for medical ethics and always comes down on the side of what's right and good and true and compassionate. So if you add the fact that he not only is a prolific author of books, as well as the senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, where he has a blog, or podcast rather, that is absolutely fabulous. Add to that when he's not writing books, he is unbelievably prolific on the columns that he writes that show up a lot of places, very frequently at National Review. And I'm so grateful. In fact, if a week goes by and I haven't gotten a couple of pieces by Wesley, I'm always concerned, but I have yet to be concerned because that hasn't happened yet. He writes and writes and writes and writes. And anybody who has ever written knows that's a lot of work and a lot of research. And his approach is above reproach. So it's always fact check, and then he issues it as a clarion call to a sleepy culture to stand up and understand what's going on around us. And I like what Blaise Pascal said. He said that science begins on the frontiers of religion. So how many of these medical ethic questions don't have moral parameters? I give you what's happening to our neighbors in the north. Wesley, the warmest of welcomes. This was actually something I wanted to talk to you about the last time we were together, because when I'm hearing how their death on demand is taking place in Canada, and I've talked to some Canadians on the air about this as well, they're giving Belgium a run for their money and Switzerland a run for their money. Give me the backstory and then tell me why things are now actually accelerating in Canada.
Thank you. And thank you for your kind words about me. $20 is in the mail.
Thank you, sir.
I've been doing the anti-euthanasia work since 1993, which mm-hmm. is 30 years. It kind of surprises me and appalls me, frankly, when I started, I didn't think that this would become basically my life's work, but it did. This and then, of course, other expanding jurisdictions along the theme of human exceptionalism. But nothing has really surprised me quite as much as Canada's enthusiastic embrace of medicalized killing. It has really stunned and appalled me. Canada, for a long time, did not allow euthanasia. There was a Supreme Court case probably 20 years ago, called the Rodriguez case, in which a majority of it was a split decision, but a majority of the court ruled that there was not a constitutional right to euthanasia in Canada. We've had the same kind of ruling, only ours was 9-0, Glucksberg v. Washington, which found no constitutional right to assisted suicide. And as we've talked about previously, actually became the basis for the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. There was a lawsuit brought, and there was a new Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled in Canada, I believe it was 2014, unanimously, that there was a constitutional right to euthanasia, and basically told the parliament to get with it and legalize it, which is, you know, the idea of a court telling a legislature to pass a law to me is abhorrent. I mean, it's mm-hmm. happened here a few times, but it shouldn't. I mean, that's not the role of the court. But the parliament, even though they had what's called a notwithstanding clause, they could have actually delayed the implementation by several years, which we don't have in our country. But they chose not to do that. Instead, they legalized euthanasia throughout the country. And they created supposed guidelines, which were really wishy-washy. The main one being that death has to be reasonably foreseeable, which, of course, is wide enough to drive a hearse through, right? Mm. But that wasn't enough. And very shortly thereafter, and you see this whenever euthanasia-assisted suicide is passed, you know, we're told, oh, the strict guidelines will protect against abuse. And then when a guideline prevents somebody from being killed or committing suicide, suddenly the guidelines are obstacles to the good, because when you legalize euthanasia, you've turned killing into a good. Mm-hmm. And so the guidelines that protect are now seen as a preventative to the good. And so agitation immediately begins to expand the laws. And in Canada, they quickly expanded the laws. And right now, euthanasia is legal for any irremediable medical condition. I mean, that could be diabetes.
Yes.
That could be a disability. That could be being HIV positive but asymptomatic. I mean, that's basically irremediable. It's a chronic condition. So people with disabilities can now be killed by doctors and are being killed by doctors. The frail elderly can be killed by doctors and are being killed by doctors. You have had a couple of, at least one joint geriatric euthanasia joint killing, where one of the people, this was before the law was changed, was reasonably foreseeable to die, and the wife wanted to be killed with him. One doctor said, well, it's not reasonably foreseeable. And then she started getting sicker. And in the news media report, it said it was like a miracle. What was the miracle? She got sicker so she could be killed. I mean, that just tells you what happens.
Yes.
You have euthanasia parties going on in Canada, where people will gather for a last goodbye. People are soon to be allowed to be killed with mental illnesses. That's starting next year. It was supposed to start this year, but they delayed it for public, PR purposes. But next year, people with mental illnesses will be allowed to be killed. There is agitation to allow pediatric euthanasia, meaning euthanizing children. And if the child is considered a mature minor, that they would be able to be killed without parental knowledge or consent. And you see that, by the way, in the Netherlands and Belgium, there's no age limit to euthanasia. So that's what's happened. And then, of course, you have the problem of when you've created a constitutional or a legal right, a positive right to be made dead, and the government's not going to set up its own killing centers, then they have to coerce the doctors to do it for them. One of the other things that stunned me, just a quick aside here, is when euthanasia was legalized, the nurses wrote a letter saying we should be allowed to kill too, meaning the certified nurse practitioners or physician's assistants, that kind of thing. So they're also allowed to kill in addition to doctors. The country has just gone off the abyss with a smile on its face, doing a swan dive. And they're now coercing doctors, at least in Ontario, they're coercing doctors into killing people. I mean, to be forced somebody to take a human life is tyranny.
Yes.
When it's not in the military with a legal order and so forth. To force a doctor to take a human life is tyranny. And what they've done is there were some doctors who sued and said, look, the Canadian Charter, which is like our Constitution, has the explicit protection of freedom of conscience and religion. That's how the term is, freedom of conscience and religion. That's actually a broader protection than the First Amendment, our free exercise of religion clause. And so they said there were some Catholic doctors, other religious doctors, other doctors who believed in the Hippocratic Oath, which prohibits euthanasia, right?
Right.
And so they sued and they said, look, forcing us to be part of this is explicitly against the charter. It violates our freedom of conscience and religion. And the courts ruled, well, you know what? You're right. It does. But there's another right, which, of course, isn't in the charter. And that is the right of every Canadian to receive all legal medical interventions that are paid for by the government. Now, that doesn't exist in the charter. They just kind of made it up. And they said, and that right to receive that treatment trumps your right not to have your faith violated. And so right now in Ontario, Canada, if a doctor is approached by a patient who is legally qualified to be killed, and as we've just discussed, that's a very broad and very loose assembly. You just basically need an irremediable medical condition causing suffering as defined by the patient, not objectively, as defined by the patient. You know, any patient can say this causes me suffering. And you either must kill that patient if you're the doctor so approached, or provide what's called an effective referral. What's an effective referral? You have to find a doctor. You have to procure the doctor who's going to commit homicide of that patient. Because that is homicide. It's a lethal injection. It's not murder because it's legal, but it is homicide. So Canada has turned homicide into a medical treatment, and they are now, at least in the province of Ontario, under threat of medical discipline, as approved by the medical society, which is a total betrayal of doctors, to participate in the intentional taking of innocent human life.
Absolutely stunning. So you have rights on collision here. So if you take the rights of conscience for the physicians and the nurses who say, I will not be complicit in this, you flip that under the supposedly non-enumerated rights of the patient. You have to decide who trumps whom in this particular situation. So will there be litigation to try to stop this, to put a hedge of protection around the rights of conscience? Because clearly that's an unanswered legal quagmire.
No, well, at least in Ontario, it is answered. The courts ruled in favor of the patient having a right to be killed. Now, not every province has that rule, but Ontario is the biggest province in Canada. And now there's pressure to force institutions like Catholic hospitals to participate in euthanasia. There was just a big medical study, and and I know this will be relied upon by legislators. They said not enough people are being prevented from being killed in religious affiliated hospitals and institutions, and there must be regulations to force them to do it. So that's the end of Catholic healthcare in Canada if that happens.
Absolutely it is. Wow. And the rights of conscience are trampled underfoot. Wesley Smith is with us. He's an author and senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's a tremendous author and writer. Got a great podcast as well. I've got a link to so much on my website. Check it out at inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org. But don't go away. More with Les right after this. So are you picking up on some of the paradoxes in our culture? In my town, they march in the street and they carry signs that say, "We follow the science." Until the science gets in the way of their political agenda, and then the science becomes an encumbrance, a stumbling block. Well, Wesley Smith understands this full well because he wrote a piece in the National Review that talks about this. Wesley, again, is an author and senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. So there's a thing known as the American Anthropological Association, and you say they are shamefully anti-scientific. Explain that to me.
Yeah. Anthropology, of course, is the study of what it means to be human. And it borrows from various scientific areas such as biology and archaeology and this kind of thing. We've seen, you know, wonderful digs in the ancient world. Plus, you know, how do we analyze the human body and this kind of thing? And there every year, the American Anthropological Association, in conjunction with the Canadian, by the way, since we were just talking about Canada, Anthropology Society, they have an annual conference. And that's where, you know, scientists and experts in these various fields get together to go over the latest data and to kind of have discourse and discussions about various agendas. And one of the panels that was going to be on the program and had been agreed to be on the program was one that basically said sex and gender are binary, meaning male and female. And of course, once that was announced, the gender ideologues who don't believe in scientific discourse and debate and discussion sought to have the panel canceled, and they, of course, were successful. And the Anthropology Association said this, I'm going to quote from its statements. The first ethical principle in AAA's Principles of Professional Responsibility is to do no harm. The session was rejected because it relied on assumptions that run contrary to the settled science in our discipline, framed in a way that do harm to vulnerable members of our community. It commits one of the cardinal sins of scholarship. It assumes the truth of the proposition that it sets out to prove, namely that sex and gender are simplistically binary and that this is a fact with a meaningful implications for the discipline. Well, that's a close quote. The very concept of settled science is anti-scientific. Science is always open to new ideas. But what's really ironic here is that one time the idea that sex was binary wasn't controversial in the least.
Exactly.
And so how did it get to be that the majority opinion among the Anthropologists Association was that there are like 30, whatever it might be, genders and so forth? Well, because there was actual discussion and debate, right? And so what we often see with the progressive left is that when they're on the outside of the walls, they say, we have to have debate. We have to have discussion. And I agree with that. Then once they're in control, discussion ends. Debate is over. The gates are locked. And so this one panel that actually brought something that still is believed by many in the scientific community, many biologists. You take a look at embryology textbooks, human embryology, and so forth. Many, many, many very prominent scientists believe that sex is binary, but you're not able to bring it up because it violates the ideology of the people in control of the Anthropological Association. And that is anti-science, because when you actually go out and censor an idea in science that you disagree with, you are hurting and undermining the way science is supposed to work.
You know, Wesley, science is a methodology. And so going back to the quote from the American Anthropological Association, I gravitated to the words that it runs contrary to the, quote, settled science in our discipline, framed in ways that do harm to vulnerable members of our community. That's a subjective statement. For a group of scientists, I find that problematic. Yes. So in other words, you've moved from objective scientific fact to it makes them feel bad. Now, nobody sets out to hurt somebody else's feelings, but I think lying to people that they're something else when they're not, first of all, belies the science, but I don't think it's compassionate kindness to tell somebody, you think you're a dog? Great. You're really a cat. But if you want me to call you a dog, I'll call you a dog. Suddenly, that whole stuff that we're seeing in the culture writ large is frighteningly, and you picked up on this, as you always do, because that's your astute observation of the world around us, that this kind of fuzzy thinking has worked its way even into the objective discipline of scientific exploration. If it happens there, it'll happen everywhere. So where's objective truth anymore?
Well, that's what's being killed. And the idea, you know, Pontius Pilate said, what is truth?
Exactly.
Well, in science, truth is supposed to be the facts as we understand them today, always subject to challenge tomorrow, right? But what's really, really, I think, insulting, if I were a transgendered person, I'd be insulted that somebody actually advocating for the idea that sex is male or female is a threat to me, or is going to be, I'm so delicate that I can't hear them even discuss it. It's really quite remarkable. And you're seeing this kind of imposition of ideology over science in medicine. You're seeing it in some of the greatest scientific journals in the world, like Nature and Science. It's really, I think, a crisis in trust for science. And in fact, I'm going to do a future podcast on that very question.
Well, you just read my mind, because I was going to say, in the conversation that's gone, as always, Wesley, far too quickly, tease either a past podcast you think our friends should really listen to, or one that's coming up we should listen to.
The one I just completed is with Alice Stewart, who is the conservative commentator on CNN on the crisis in trust in media.
Wow. Absolutely fascinating. I'm going to be checking that out for sure. Wesley, thank you so much. I want to tell my friends you can learn more about Wesley by going to our website, inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org. Click on the red box that says program details and audio. It takes you over to the website where we've got all the information, a longer bio for Wesley, a link to the Human Exceptionalism Center, where you're going to discover his podcast. It's called Humanize. And so I've got a link on the right-hand side. So just that excellent one that he just did with Alice, you'll get a chance to follow that as well. So check it out. Wesley, thank you. May your inkwell never run dry. You challenge a sleeping culture to raise their head above the roar of the culture and seek that which is good and right and true. And I am the better for it, as I know millions of others are as well. Check out Wesley's wonderful work. Thank you, friends. Hope you learned to think critically and biblically this hour. And we'll see you next time on In the Market with Janet Partial.